Welcome to the Hardwood Hustle powered by PGC Basketball. We believe in the value of a coach. We're here to educate, empower, and encourage you to lead like never before. This week, we're joined by Coach Jonas Allen. With years of high school and college coaching experience, Coach Allen was in his second year as a head coach when he was ready to quit. In this episode, he shares how he transformed his coaching and quickly turned around his program to win a state championship. Let's get started.
Welcome to the Hardwood Hustle. Sam and TJ here with you, and we have a special guest today, one of our PGC coaching community members, Jonas Allen. Jonas, first off, great last name, and welcome to the show.
Agreed, Sam. Thank you. Thank you guys for having me. I just want to say real quick, not only did y'all change the trajectory of my basketball coaching experience, but you also really changed the trajectory of my life. So needless to say, it's an honor to be here. None of that's an exaggeration. I'm hoping that sharing my story might feel a little supportive or helpful to other coaches.
Absolutely. Well, thanks for the kind words. TJ will Venmo you later for that. So, you know, Jonas, you have a great story to tell, and we're excited to unpack it. But at a high level for our listeners, let me just share the 30,000 foot overview of it, which is, you know, you coached in college, then you got out of college coaching, went into high school coaching. You had a challenging first couple of years. You recognize, man, I need to do some inner work. I need to change how I'm approaching this thing. And then you turned it around in a very quick time, and you won a state championship 2 years later after you did all this work. And we're going to talk about some of the things that you did that I think other coaches, they have the same challenges you have, and TJ and I have, and we all have these challenges. We have a lot of exciting stuff too, but let's start there with, you get into high school. And yeah, just talk to us about some of those problems that were going on for you.
Yeah, I think when I went into the high school game, it was the first time I'd been a head coach. And I think that presents a lot of different challenges. When I had coached in college, I was an assistant coach, and that was amazing. But being a head coach is very different. And so I think I sort of went into it a little naive. In terms of what was going to be expected of me, the pressures I was going to face. And I basically made countless mistakes, right off the bat. And I can just talk about some of those. I think that I took things really personally right off the bat. I think that for so many of us, for so many coaches and players, basketball is this really important thing, for almost all of us who love the game. It goes back to our childhoods, and we kind of defined ourselves by basketball and how, whether we could play, and then, how good were we, and then could we coach, could we win, And so, I think it can become very, very personal and very emotional. It can be a little bit ego-driven. And I fell into that hole full on in those first 2 years. And I would take things personally. I would take criticism personally. Parents, administration, things weren't going well with players. I mean, everything, it just felt like this incredible load. And I just wasn't, I wasn't living up to who I wanted to be. Things were going terribly in the program. Not only were we not winning, but people were really miserable, and I was getting that feedback. I was ready to leave. I started talking to the AD, and I said, hey, these 2 years, thanks for this opportunity, but I guess it's just not the right fit, And to be honest, I think I was still blaming the other people for that. Yeah, this is too much, too critical. This town is too entitled. All the excuses we all come up with. And I'll try to make this quick, but basically, what happened is my second season ended, and right then the world shut down with COVID. And so it presented this really incredible opportunity. Suddenly, I had a lot of time on my hands. My full-time job stopped. Coaching was done for that year, and it would have been done anyway because of COVID. And I started, sort of starting this process of like, well, maybe I should take another look at this before I walk away. And that's actually when I found you guys. At that time, you were Key 5. And I was on the internet, and I just started following you guys, listening to interviews, listening to trainings, you know, and it really struck me in this totally different way, the way you guys were talking about transformational coaching versus transactional coaching. And, you know, I'll wrap this part up for now, but basically, with really the support of Key Five and various other places that I access support, I thought I'm going to give this another shot. I'm going to give this another run, and I'm going to take a pretty different approach this time around. And that's exactly what I did. Not only was it more enjoyable and was it the right way to do things, as you guys often talk about, but what to me is it also just translated into a successful winning program. And I don't think the idea of transformational coaching, I don't see it at all as separate from also prioritizing being competitive and winning. I think they go completely together. And I think my story is just an example of that, you know, 2 years of losing and sort of misery, and then 2 years of turning things around. And next thing you know, there we are, sort of, you know, winning a state championship and having this incredible experience we had.
Jonas, just curious as to, how did you get to that place of being willing to just kind of humble yourself and take accountability? Because, you know, I think it's one thing, like I have a desire to unwrap my player's identity in basketball, but I find it difficult enough just to unwrap my own identity in basketball. You know, like it's a regular challenge. So let's talk to us about how you came to that place of just being like, man, I need to reexamine this whole thing.
You know, I think a couple things came together. I think, as you guys well know, the public nature of basketball, you know, you're on display, in Maine, where, you know, a lot of these small towns. And, you know, when I was hired for this high school job, the principal, the administration told me that, you know, you're going to be one of the most recognizable faces in this school. You're the basketball coach, right? And everyone thinks they know basketball, and everyone's going to be critiquing. And so I think failing in that public way, was this very humbling moment or series of moments. And I think simultaneously, I was also going through some things in my personal life where, you know, things just weren't going the way I was sort of wanting my life to go. And so, you know, when I, you know, meeting you guys, you know, and understanding how you approach things, maybe I was fortunate, maybe there was a little bit of a coincidence. It overlapped the time in my life where I was also really just starting to look at myself as a person. And those things overlapped a little bit. And to your point, TJ, you know, I just, you know, when we grow up and we get all this positive reinforcement because we're good basketball players, it is a real challenge to figure out what else am I about? Where is my self-worth? Like, and what I realized is that as I was failing in basketball, I had very little else to lean on in terms of like what made me feel good about myself as a person. And so there was just sort of this reckoning of like, wait a minute. Like, okay, so I'm coaching, I'm losing, and now I'm sort of losing joy across the board. And, you know, so it really was a kind of a bottoming out moment in terms of I had work to do, you know, not just on my pro, the basketball was honestly the second and third part of it. I had work to do on myself. Why was I coaching? Right. And what I had to come to grips with a little bit is that I was coaching to make myself feel better. Right. I was coaching to try to like boost my ego and win and feel like, okay, well, that makes me a worthwhile person. And I had to look at myself in the mirror with that, because if that's what's driving you and that's what was driving me, I'll be honest, it's a little embarrassing to say it, but it's true. If that's what's driving you, it's not going to be good outcomes in any way, shape, or form, even if you do get some W's along the way.
It's so good, Jonas. Yeah, I mean, leadership is rewarding and leadership is challenging. Those two things are true. Here's what I think about. Maybe you can speak into this. There's a thing called the three S's. So sometimes when things aren't going well, sometimes we got to change one of these three S's. Sometimes you got to change all three of these S's. And I think you actually changed all three, which is strategy, story, and state. So sometimes we have the wrong strategy about something in our own leadership. Maybe we're telling ourselves the wrong story. Like, you know, you mentioned like kids, you had the mantra kids these days. You were pushing blame on the kids and not looking at yourself. And then sometimes we just got to we're in the wrong state of mind. Like we spiral downwards and we get into a very negative state. And I think you probably changed, you got a new strategy of how you wanted to, you know, approach coaching. You changed the story you were telling yourself. And then you change your own state of mind and how you showed up every day. Like, so I know I didn't share that with you beforehand. You're hearing it for the first time right now, but maybe speak into like just a little bit of that, if you don't mind.
Oh, I mean, you're absolutely right. I was in complete need of looking at all three of those. There's no question. And, you know, I'll a little bit out of order here, but the story, right? The story, and I've already alluded to this, I won't go on and on about it, was that basketball was my self-worth, right? Like that was the story. And I was here to prove it, right? Like that's why I was coaching. And so that story I had to completely let go of that. You know, the strategy, the state, oh, you're absolutely right. And I remember still, I was on a training with you guys and, you know, it was a small group of coaches. I don't know, maybe there was 15 or 20 of us. I don't remember exactly. And you guys had, you know, we're really focusing on, and you know, it's kind of common now. I think a lot of people use the terminology, you know, transformational coaching versus transactional coaching. You know, and I think about this when I think about the state of mind and the you know, everything that comes, like it starts there. Any strategy, anything else, it has to start there. But what I didn't understand, guys, for a long time, even when I started taking trainings with you, I heard these concepts, right? Transformational, transactional, you know. And I understood it in theory, you know, and of course, we all want to be transformational coaches. I think we all think of ourselves, I think even transactional coaches think they're transformational coaches, by the way. And what I mean by that is that they think they're changing these young men's lives by turning them into winners, right? So I did change that. I am a transformational coach, right? But I didn't I wasn't digging far enough beneath that surface level. And I actually had a moment in a training with you guys where it was sort of my moment, my epiphany or my aha moment or whatever you want to call it, where it hit me like a ton of bricks. It's how I tend to process. It's like I'll think about something forever and then it'll hit me all at once. And what hit me all at once was that I'm a fraud. If I think that I'm a transformational coach, but I'm not actively transforming myself every day, then I'm a fraud, because then I'm asking my kids to do something that I'm not willing and able to do. And so what I in that day changed how I coached. Every day from that day forward, my strategy was to look at how am I changing, right? Like first and foremost, I believe as coaches, we're role models. So whatever I say to those kids is secondary to what they're watching and what they're feeling and what they're hearing from me. And so like transformational coaching, right? Like, okay, fine. Yes, we want to help the kids transform. But first and foremost, we have to be transforming, right? And again, I think that's daily. I don't think that's a destination. I don't think that's because we won, we're there, or because we've had this, you know, like, you know, yeah, okay, so my team won a state championship. That by no means means, okay, well, I'm a transformational coach. Look what I've done, right? Or now my kids are happy. Now the parents are happy. No, like it's a daily process to be a transformational coach. And so those three S's you talked about, I think that all kind of comes together because everything starts there. It starts with, am I transforming? Am I learning and growing? And am I taking accountability every single day?
Jonas, I love that. I'm curious, can you give me some tangible, like, what did that look like? You know, what was actually happening before that was no longer happening? What were the things that were, you know, a coach could actually say, yeah, how did you show up different? How did your players think you showed up different?
Yeah, absolutely. So I would say in my first 2 years, I wasn't leading myself well. You know, so for example, I think of countless times this happened. You know, the AD would call me into their office. Hey, Jonas, we had this complaint. You know, hey, you know, this mom's mad. This dad's upset, right? Like they feel like they can't reach you. They feel like you're not accessible, right? So they want to talk about playing time, or they want to talk about, you know, whatever. And I'd get all stirred up, right? And get frustrated, you know, with the parents, and then, you know, get frustrated with the AD. Oh, he didn't have my back. Why am I dealing with this? And now I come into the gym, and I'm bringing all that with me, and I'm bringing resentment to these kids. And I don't tell them what just happened, of course, but they're kids, they're sponges, right? They soak up everything. So I walk in that gym with a chip on my shoulder, right? Almost a little bit like angry that it's strange to think about in hindsight, but almost angry that I was there, right? And so then the whole practice has this tone, right? Where it's like, I'm almost looking for the negative and like reason that this job isn't that good. And so for me, a huge part of growth and a part of you know, to that idea of everyday transforming is, how am I showing up, right? Like, how do I grow? No matter what I've just experienced, whether it's in my personal life or a meeting with the AD or, you know, whatever, what am I sharing with these kids? That's my first responsibility. You know, and when I talk about the way you guys have helped me change how I approach life, that is now what I think about with everything. What am I sharing with my wife? What am I sharing with my children? What am I sharing with, you know, my mom? What am I sharing, you know? And so it's that when I walk into, you know, to go back to make it about basketball again, when I walk into the gym, you know, I have to be really aware, am I ready to be here? Am I in leadership mode? What am I sharing with these kids, right? That's on me. That's on me every single day as a coach.
Yeah, Jonas, I think you bring up some really good points, which is, and it's hard, like as a high school coach too, like it's different than college, because in high school, you literally might be teaching all day in the classroom. You walk out, or you walk in the office, you might change clothes, and 10 minutes later, you're leading your whole team who's looking to you. And by the way, they've been in class all day. Whereas, you know, TJ gets to have 3-hour meetings with his staff and have a casual lunch. And I'm just kidding. But I am serious. Like, you, it's a real thing. Like, you got to change your state of mind as a coach before you step on that practice floor. And I think that is a really important point for coaches listening, is getting ourselves in the right state of mind prior to engaging with the athlete and the player. Or another way we like to say it is, you know, get connected before you correct. Connect with somebody before you're going to correct them. You know, you're going and criticizing or coaching this kid up, but you haven't even connected with them on a personal level. And maybe last night their grandmother died. Maybe their dad, you know, just got verbally abusive with them in the home, and they're bringing that. Like, we will never know that if we don't connect with them. So I just wanted to highlight, you know, what you're speaking into there, like get back to the state of mind thing. We got to get ourselves right in the right state of mind as a coach. And the only way we can do that is by leading ourselves well. And I mean, you spoke into that. And so here you are, you go to this deep dive of personal growth during COVID. And then you come back, then, you know, that third year. Tell us, let's go there with it. What do you start to see change? What starts happening in your program where you're seeing the signs that you've made the changes, and therefore the program's made the changes?
Well, it was interesting because that summer, when everything was shut down, the only thing I was allowed to do with my team was Zoom meetings. Right. We couldn't be in the gym together. They, you know, the idea was, of course, that they were doing their individual workouts at a playground or somewhere safe, you know, and then we were doing Zoom meetings. And so, again, it was interesting. The circumstances sort of forced us into this really different way of connecting. And I think that was huge. right? Next thing you know, we're having these you know, sort of team group meetings. You know, we're talking about things like gratitude, right? We're talking about things like, you know, what was something hard that you dealt with this week, right? And so next thing you know, we're just like bonding in this really different way as a group. And I'm being more vulnerable. I'm letting them into my life a little bit, right? I'm explaining the why behind things, right? Like those first 2 years, I was kind of that old school those first 2 years. I just kind of wanted to be, well, it's 'cause I said so, right? Like that's how I was coached when I was young, both in high school and in college. It was like, you don't ask questions, you just do it, right? And I had the same thing with parents. Don't ask me questions, right? If your kids want something, tell them to come to me. I don't, you know, parents, I'm not talking to you. And during that stretch where all we could do was Zoom, it really changed the way we communicated. And next thing I knew, right, I was seeing the kids respond when I was really offering the full why behind anything we did, right? Like if there was a workout I gave them to do on their own, rather than just saying, here's what you got to go do, right? I really explained how it makes them a better player, how it makes us a better team, right? We talked about roles, right? About starring in your role, stuff you guys talk about all the time, obviously. And like, why? Like, what's the why behind that? And why is this role just as important as this role, even though it won't show up in statistics? And so as we came out of that summer, and then we were fortunate enough, although that next season was a modified season, we didn't get to have a postseason tournament. We only played 10 games. You could feel it the moment we walked on the court. You could feel the investment we had put in through Zoom, but nevertheless that we had put in during that time when we were all shut down. And I know I walked in differently every day based on what we've already talked about, understanding my energy, right? Understanding, that I was willing to do things like give full explanations, talk to parents, bring parents in fact, right? Like I totally changed the way I engaged with parents. I went from basically don't talk to me to, yeah, let's talk about it. These are kids. They need the adults to be on the same page here. Right. Like they need the adults to be talking because these are 15, 16, 17 year old kids. And so like if we want what's best for them, the adults need to be on the same page. And so, again, pretty much across the board, I changed the way I communicated, changed my energy, started like I got really into this idea of sort of the internal and external scoreboard. Right. Like finding things that we could do every day in practice that we could deem a win that had nothing to do with what the score said on Friday night's game. Right. So how much we were supporting each other. Right. Like all those little things you can create in a practice. Right. Like, you know, and then that started feeding over into games. Like we had we made a policy, and I had already had this in my first 2 years about how our players don't talk to the refs. That was really important to me. But in the first 2 years, that was because I said so. The second 2 years, that was because I truly believe not only does that represent who we want to be in terms of sort of like, I don't want my kids to be out there ranting and raving, but it also I'd explained to them, I truly believe it gives us a competitive advantage when one team is being, you know, 16-year-olds are barking at a ref all day and the other isn't. Those referees are people. Right. So all of this stuff, why are we doing this, coach? Why are we doing it? I was answering those things. The kids were buying into it. We would talk about a win being, did we have a full game with no one complaining to the referees? Right. Like that was a win for us, regardless of whether we won or lost the game. And so we were starting to identify all these ways to, measure success. Right. And practice games across the board in the whole energy. I mean, I can feel it even when I'm talking right now, like the whole energy of the program changed, you know, and it didn't stop. It was, you know, the next 2 years, it just went up like seemingly every day. I mean, of course, that's not possible. We had our setbacks and losses and all those things. But once we got that momentum going, we really had that thing going in the right direction.
Yeah. And that's such a great feeling. And, you know, I can tell you recounting the story, how excited and passionate you're getting, you know, just thinking about it. You brought up something early, go back to or highlight is, you know, the whole idea, the transactional versus transformational, Jonas, and how that you had heard it before, but then you all of a sudden had that aha moment. You know, TJ and I talk about, you know, we have good friends who are really transformational coaches, but maybe they lack in an area of their leadership or coaching and they lose and therefore they get fired. And now they can no longer be a transformational coach. So I say that to say, like, for us to impact more lives, we, you know, if you're coaching most coaching situations, high school and above, you do have to win to keep your job. And so it allows, you know, by winning, you can continue to be a transformational coach. So that's where those things, I think, hold hands together really well. And I just, you know, you brought that up and I wanted to highlight that for the listeners. You know, what else would you tell coaches, the coach who's listening right now, and, you know, this is a time of year where they've started practice or about to, and, you know, maybe they are going through it. Maybe they're having some challenges. What would you tell them to focus on so that they can have a pivot like you did?
Yeah, that's a great question, Sam. I think for me, you know, I saw this in myself and then I saw it in other coaches, is, you know, when we're focusing on the negative, when we're focusing on what's wrong, right? And we do this in all sorts of ways. We talk, you know, we've already referenced this, but the kids these days, right? That whole narrative, right? They don't work hard. They don't know how to compete. Social media has ruined them. They're selfish, right? When we start buying into any of that, right? Like, we are so far off the track, right? Kids these days are not all that different, right? I think kids these days face an incredible amount of stress and pressures that we didn't when we were kids. In a lot of ways, I think things are a lot tougher for them these days. And so if anything, I think kids these days need more support and they need more from their coaches, not to be blamed and almost vilified, right? Likewise, parents, you know, we could go on and on. When I was hired, I had people at the school that I was working at told me in a somewhat joking way, but not really, that I was foolish for taking this job, right? I had a guy tell me, you were hired to put out a dumpster fire, and I bought into that. I'll be honest. I bought into it. And then everything that went wrong, right? I was like, yeah, that's right. That guy told me this and he was right. This was an impossible situation. So it can't be my fault. Right. And so I was always almost like looking for reasons that if I wasn't doing well or my program wasn't doing well, there was something out there, some negativity, something I could blame. And a quote from Dick DiVenzio, right? I mean, it says it all, right? And I put this in the coach's locker room once I met you guys and started learning from Coach DiVenzio and his books. And the quote is, someone somewhere could take your exact same set of circumstances and work wonders. Right. And that to me, like, it is a privilege to be around these kids. It is a privilege to coach basketball. And I understand now, like, you know, unfortunately, I had to step away from basketball after my fourth season. But I understand now, right, because it's not about wins and losses in terms of the exterior scoreboard. Although I still believe that being a transformational coach is a competitive advantage, right? You can work wonders every single day in the gym when you're in the right space, when you have mentors, when you have people who are helping frame things for you, right? So that the negativity doesn't run things and you're not making excuses and blaming other people, right? Like, I really believe this is that when we have an opportunity to work with kids, that's an opportunity not only, again, for us to impact them, but for us to grow, the coaches, the adults. Right. And that's when great things happen. right? And that's to that quote from DiVincenzo, right? Like, I guarantee you someone somewhere could have stepped in those first 2 years when I wasn't doing this, when I was blaming everyone else, and have done a lot better job than I did if they were in the right mindset and they had the right support. And until I shifted, that was never, ever going to happen. And so I my biggest thing to coaches that I would encourage them to do is just, you know, be grateful you get to be on the court with those kids, right? Be grateful, because I guarantee you someone who is in the right mindset and is grateful, and again, has the right support and is framed this right way, could walk in and make that an unbelievable experience, not only for the kids, but for the coaches too.
Yeah, Jonas, I love the story, man. This is just deep and powerful. I got multiple questions for you. Feel free to answer any or one of them. But one, just kudos on taking extreme ownership. Like, that's just impressive. I think that's a hard thing for people to do. You just owned it, you know, and kudos on that. And one question is like, yep, you got to take some bold steps to make that kind of change. Like, even your players are used to a type of coach, and now you're going to be a different type of coach, right? Like, that's probably confusing to them. So talk about some of those bold steps that you had to take and how it felt to the players. And the second part of that question is really curious as to like how this all affected home life. You know what I mean? Like, what were the things going on at home and different? Because a lot of times I think coaches think, well, if I can get this stuff right at home, I could just feel free to coach, right? Or if coaching's going good, then I can show up well at home. Like, just talk about the balance of, you know, your relationships and things that go on at home and balancing that with being a coach. Cause you know, there's so many demands of being a coach and so many, you know, ups and downs, and it's like you're parenting so many different kids and you've got so many relationships to manage. So talk a little bit about that as well.
Yeah. So the first part of your question there, TJ, I would say this, there's one thing that absolutely did not change, you know, in the time there, is that I'm a fiery, passionate guy, and I am competitive, right? I think I had to redefine a little bit what that meant, but that was something that my players didn't see change in me, right? Like they always knew, like, this is an intense guy. And so I had to explain to them a little bit some of these changes that were happening, right? Why we were taking these different approaches, why we were doing things like talking about gratitude. But I think, again, that you know, coaches, you know, sort of question like, well, how can I just be a different coach? Kids are incredibly resilient. Kids can adjust. You just have to explain why, right? You just have to explain that this is, I've done this growth, right? To me, like, that's another example of like modeling, right? Like, hey, like, you know, this is how we're investing in things. This is what we're changing. As long as they see that it's truly what you believe in now and what you buy into, right? They're on board. And as you can imagine, the morale in my program, it took the kids no time to buy into this new way of doing things, right? And again, I still think that there is this confusion out there around, you know, the transformational coaching, and is like, well, is it just warm and fuzzy, right? And like, so you guys stopped working hard, or like, and that is so not it, right? That could not be further from the case. I honestly believe that, you know, we were one of the hardest practicing and hardest playing teams in the state. I think that's why we did what we did, right? So there's this misnomer about like, oh, that means we have to be soft now. The kids need us to be soft. No, it's not about that at all, right? It's about framing things in a way that they understand and that they see you modeling for them every day so that they can follow you, that you're someone they want to follow, not someone that they're scared of. Right. And I think that's just like when you have kids who want to follow you and who you can feel the love from and you love them, you guys know now all of a sudden anything's possible. When you have kids that are scared of you, or kids that are only playing because they want to get their playing time and they want to get their minutes, you're not going to get anything out of that team, you know? And so, you know, we didn't lose our edge. That's for sure. I didn't lose my edge. You know, we played every bit. We played harder because the kids were bought in.
Jonas, I would say this too, is like you mentioned this earlier. I love that distinction. I think that's an important one. You are an intense guy. You're a passionate guy. That didn't change, but you redirected it or channeled it in a different way, right? You can be an intense guy and blow the whistle at practice and say, you guys aren't playing hard. We suck right now. Get on the line. Or you could blow the whistle and say, hey guys, we have a standard of effort here. And right now our effort, do you think our effort is where it needs to be? And they're like, no, coach said, well, hey, we said that's who we are. And now your intensity is there. Your demand is there. Your standard is set, but again, I'm just trying to show an example. I don't know if that's a fair example for you, but it's just a different approach on how to hold the standard that you're trying to set, right?
Oh man, you just jarred my memory a little bit there, Sam, with that. I think one of the biggest things I did differently too is that I made sure that the kids were setting, like the kids, the captains, the seniors, they were a part of setting that standard, right? Like what do you guys want, right? What do you want out of this season, right? Making it theirs, not making it just mine, right? So when they tell me and they look me in the eye and they say, coach, we want to win a state championship, right? Now all of a sudden, right? And we talk and they define, what does that mean? How hard do we need to work? What does a practice look like? Right? Now all of a sudden, I'm just tapping into them. I don't have to go off on them. Right? I mean, again, I hold them to their own standards. So it's very intense, but it's not in a derogatory way. It's not like, you know, I had coaches growing up in high school and college who just would blatantly call us names, you know? And when you're just simply reminding guys, hey, you're falling short of your goal. This is what you want. You identified this, right? And you agreed that you want me to push you to that level, right? And so I'm doing my job right now, right? And so I'm not going to let you get away with something that you have clearly identified is not who you want to be as a basketball player, right? And that is so different than questioning, I mean, the old toxic way of coaching, I mean, questioning everything. I won't even get into it because it's just so inappropriate at this point. But, you know, so holding kids to their own standard, what they've agreed to, what they want, right? And then sometimes educating them on that. Hey, you say you want to win a state championship. Here's what that means. Right. And so sometimes they do need the coach to take it to that next level. Right. Well, every other team wants to win a state championship, too. That's not enough. What are we doing? And then they understand that. And then there's the full buy-in.
Yeah, that's powerful. I absolutely. And Sam, great articulation, too, of like what that looks like. And so the players, the standard, you know, because it's one thing oftentimes in a transactional culture, I feel like the coach just holds the standard. And when it's transformational, everybody's holding the standard. And I think that's a big difference. And I think goes back to what you talked about a second ago. That's why transformational coaches have an edge, is because it's not just their standard, it's our standard. And I think that's really powerful. And dive into the second one a little bit, Jonas, too, just like about off the court life, you know, because I think so many times the coaching life is imbalanced. You know, like we show up a certain way for our team and, you know, maybe we're winning on the court, but we're losing at home. Maybe we're losing on the court and losing at home. Maybe, you know, like it's not often that we can just separate those two things. And how did you find balance in that? And what were some things that changed just overall in life?
Well, I think I would say this. Those first 2 years, I think I was losing in both places. I was bringing negativity. I was sharing negativity between settings. You know, I'd have something happen at on the court or with a parent or administration, whatever. I'd bring that home. I wasn't home. I was basically never home for dinner. I just thought I had to, you know, again, I was sort of buying into that old thing of like, you just have to be watching film and grinding all the time. And so I think those first 2 years, I don't, you know, during the season, I didn't see my family. You know, I'd get home and my youngest would already be in bed. I heard these horrible stories from my wife about like him wanting to stay up a little bit later, right? And I was just clueless. I think my ego around basketball was driving me to the point where I had completely lost track of what I was doing at home. You know, I look back on that, it's really hard for me to say. You know, that's rough. So here's an interesting part, and here's sort of where my story, you know, at least for now at this point, kind of comes full around is, so my second 2 years, you know, I started working with you guys. I was doing a better job with the home stuff. Well, first of all, things were more positive on the court. So, there wasn't as much negativity as general, but I did a better job at home. I was, you know, going home for dinners and, you know, showing improvement in that way, I guess, is how when I would look back on it and see it. But, you know, it actually took, and this is why I had to step down from coaching. It actually took a family emergency within my family during my fourth year of coaching for me to realize that despite maybe some improvements, I was still really missing it in terms of prioritizing my family first and foremost. You know, and as a high school coach, right, that doesn't pay the bills. You have to have your full time job. And then you're coaching the high school team, right? And again, it took a pretty serious situation for me to really look in the mirror and say, okay, I grew tremendously as a coach, right? And we did a pretty miraculous thing considering how quickly it all happened. And I'm proud of that, and I love those kids, and you know, that'll be something we remember forever. But the biggest lesson from all of this came when I had to understand that despite all of that improvement and all the personal growth I had done, I still had this biggest lesson, which was that I had to go back to prioritizing my family. And there was grief for me in stepping down from that job because I had given it everything I had to build. But I wasn't prioritizing my family still to the level that I needed to. And so there was only one answer at that point, right? Is that things had gotten to a point, circumstances were what they were, that I had to step down. And so I'll coach again. No question. I'll coach again. But with that lesson leading the way this time around. That all this other stuff, all this growth as a coach, and all is wonderful. I love it. I'm passionate about it, right? I'll talk to anyone who will listen. But if you're not first and foremost showing up how you need to at home with your wife and your children or whoever you have at home, it's not sustainable. And that was the biggest lesson from the whole thing for me.
Well, Jonas, your testimony, your story is powerful. Like we've said, man, we appreciate your vulnerability, your transparency and sharing. And I think coaches are really going to gain great value from this. You know, as we conclude here, is there any, you know, parting thoughts or thought that you have for our listeners?
Yeah, I guess I would just go back to something we've hit on a couple times, which is that working with you guys, listening to you, it really changed how I saw the role of coaching in my life. You know, I saw it as an opportunity to learn and grow and connect, right? It's really about connection, right? It's about connecting and helping other people grow and helping ourselves grow. Seeing it all as this incredible opportunity. As much as we can, trying to take our ego out of it, being really clear with why we're doing it, having those hard conversations. That's what, you know, you guys talk about, like, how did I get to the point where I was actually able to look in the mirror? Well, to be honest, I don't think I would have done that on my own. I think I needed to have a group where multiple people were talking about similar issues, talking about culture. What are you creating? What are the kids you're coaching learning? Are you balancing family and home? I don't think I would have gotten there if I was just doing that on my own, right? And so I think that part of why I wanted to come on here and thank you guys is because I think that you know, I don't know, we call it all these different things, but mentors, leveling up, whatever it is that we're trying to do, I think it's a, I don't think it's just like a good idea. I think it's kind of an obligation we have as coaches to be learning and getting better for the sake of everyone, for the sake of us, for the sake of our families, for the sake of our players, the communities we serve. It's too important of a role. Sports and, you know, basketball in this case means so much to these kids. And we really need guidance and mentorship and support to provide a great experience for everyone.
Yeah, you took the words out of my mouth, Jonas, which is too important of a role, right? Coaches, we play too important a role. We're helping shaping the future of the youth and who they're becoming as young men and women. And hey, our mission at Heartwood Hustle is to educate, empower, and encourage. And I think you did all three of those things today, Jonas. I think you helped TJ and I and the thousands of people listening to this. So snaps to you. Thank you to you. We appreciate your time. So for you, Jonas, and for the Heartwood Hustle, for TJ and myself, we are out.
Thanks again for tuning into this episode of the Heartwood Hustle, where we believe in the value of a coach. If you're interested in one of our coaching clinics, diving into one of our coaching tracks, or simply joining our PGC coaching community, go to pgccoaching.com to find the support you've been looking for in all aspects of your coaching. From the Heartwood Hustle team, thanks again. We can't wait to be with you again next week.